The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It is 5 minutes past nine and it is Wednesday the 28th of May 2025. Hope you're very well. How is your day going so far? How has your week been so far? Let us know. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. It's available for you to pass on any messages you might have, raise your issues, and if there's anything we can help you with, please get in touch with us. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and your emails come in to us on comments@highlandradio.com. and if you're listening to the podcast or the repeat of the show, the overnight repeat, feel free to send in your emails. By the way, we love your views whenever you send them, and we can carry them over into the next live show. So whether you're listening live or on demand or through the repeat, all of your views very, very welcome indeed. And of course you can watch the show if it does suit you. We're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, on the X platform as well, Highland Radio, it's as simple as that. And on YouTube, it's Highland Radio Ireland. And the thing with YouTube is you can pause, you can rewind, you can watch it on your big TV at home, or your Fire Stick, or any device that has the YouTube app on it as well. So lots of people watch on YouTube, lots of people watch on X, and they've kind of overtaken Facebook now, believe it or not. Facebook used to have Facebook Watch, which was great because you had an app on your telly and you could watch Facebook videos, but for some reason they got rid of that. But anyway, in terms of how you consume us, YouTube and X actually are the most popular, which is interesting. Right, let's look at some of the papers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice, funeral of the late Bernie Cranley on Thursday. The funeral of the late Bernie Cranley, who died following a collision on the A5 near Oma, takes place tomorrow, Thursday, at St. Patrick's Church, Murlagh, Lifford, at 3 p.m. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Times this morning, and Ireland falls further behind on emissions targets. Now, it has to be said, I think we all saw this coming, as soon as a million cars by 2030, a million electric cars by 2030 was announced as a solution, I was thinking, right, okay, we all know that's not going to happen. Then when they started talking about new technology to reduce farm emissions, you know, that was aspirational. That technology simply didn't exist. And I'm only going back 2 or 3 years ago. And as I say, one was that there'd be a million electric cars on the roads, nonsense. But two, that, you know, in some way we'd develop brand new technology to reduce emissions. The emissions from cars is actually going up, it has to be said. But anyway, more generally speaking from the article, Ireland is projected to achieve a reduction of just 23% in total greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, compared to a national target of 51%, according to the latest EPA projection. The widening performance gap represents a significant worsening on last year, when a 29% reduction was projected by decade end, after a fall in the country's overall emissions of nearly 7% in 2023. Well, the widening gap to the emission reduction target of 51% in Ireland's Climate Act is driven by updated information provided by government bodies. The EPA says the data was factored into its modelling. The latest data indicates none of the biggest emitting sectors, transport, agriculture, buildings and energy, will meet 2030 legally binding targets. This is even unlikely to be achieved under the most optimistic scenarios, including full implementation of the government's Climate Action Plan. Now, the problem with this is it's not just simply saying, oh, well, sure, we knew that wouldn't happen. We signed up to this, so we are on the hook for billions of euros of fines from the EU. But look, I mean, if we're going to still continue to build buildings with concrete and concrete blocks and all that type of stuff, that's an issue. Wind and solar, it blows and it shines at times, but we're not really storing it to use it when we need it. the electric car targets were never going to be met. That has to be said, because it was always nonsense. And of course, in terms of farming, it's a, you know, it's a very vibrant industry, and you can't plug cows' bums or whatever might be causing the issues. So anyway, it's going to hit us financially big time. Of course, extensive coverage of the incident in Liverpool in all the papers today. I'll take it from the Irish Independent for now. And police have a lot of questions to answer after a car is believed to have tailgated an ambulance through a roadblock at Liverpool FC's Premier League victory parade and ploughed into a crowd of fans, injuring 65 people. A top security expert has warned the horrifying incident should never have happened, as officials face tough questions about safety measures at Monday's event, which saw up to a million fans flock to the city streets. A 53-year-old man arrested on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving will be quizzed by police, or was being quizzed by police last night, as police scoured CCTV to work out how the car was able to reach road closures or breach them. And it wasn't the only car there. I was looking through some footage yesterday, not of the gruesome incident itself, but in the lead up to it. And there seemed to be other cars driving through. But we've seen that outside Croke Park as well. I remember exiting Croke Park and the road was referenced yesterday. I can't remember it off the top of my head. And cars were pulling in and out of driveways and moving very slowly amongst the crowd. So it's not something I haven't seen myself. Just to recap, 11 people remain in hospital after a Ford Galaxy struck fans, driven by a driver, of course, on Water Street off the main parade route on the Strand at around 6 p.m, leaving some trapped under the vehicle. Merseyside Police Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims said there was a roadblock in place, but it was temporarily lifted for an ambulance to reach a man suffering a suspected heart attack. And of course, the driver tailgated in, and then the chaos ensued. I don't know if this is going to be relevant to any of you listening or your family, but it's been described as chaos because Donald Trump halts all student visas into the States. The future of many young Irish students was thrown into chaos yesterday after the White House ordered US embassies to halt foreign student visa applications. In a major escalation of the Trump administration's battle with the higher education system, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has told officials to stop scheduling appointments with students' visa applicants as they prepare to implement a social media vetting process. A memo which had been, it's funny, you know, we were talking about this a couple of months ago, when people were being discouraged from going over and protesting in the United States. And I remember asking the guest at the time, you know, people would need to really purge their social media. And he agreed, I believe, at the time. Little did I know that the Trump administration would actually be setting up a system to scour people's social media. Well, a memo which had been obtained by news website Politico states, effective immediately, in preparation for an expansion of required social media screening and vetting, consular sections should not add any additional students or exchange visitors and visa appointment capacity until further guidance is issued. Now, I wonder, have any of you been affected by that? Were any, maybe you yourself, or maybe you, the younger people in your house, were they scheduled to have a meeting to obtain a visa to go to America? That is a problem. Children have been catastrophically failed by Children's Health Ireland in a string of failures that have breached trust, the Dáil has heard. The Irish Daily Mirror reports that just days after a report into hip dysplasia surgery in children and a Sunday Times report that procedures on children had been delayed due to the decision to move them from public to private waiting lists, Health Minister Jennifer Carr-McNeill confirmed three board members of Children's Health Ireland had resigned. The Sunday Times reported that a consultant breached HSE guidelines by referring patients he was seeing in his public practice to his weekend private clinics rather than securing earlier treatment for them by referring them to HSE colleagues. Now, there is a system in place whereby consultants in hospitals can refer people, but every option for that person to receive treatment in the public hospital has to be exhausted. And it's done through the National Treatment Purchase Fund. And quite interestingly, a large percentage of national, you know, if we think, if you think of the NTPF, National Treatment Purchase Fund, you think Northern Ireland, you think Britain, you think Spain, wherever. But almost half, I think it's almost half of treatments through the National Treatment Programme actually happen in public hospitals, which is was news to me. I didn't realise that. Well, the newspaper, The Times, said the consultant was paid thousands of euros through the state's National Treatment Purchase Fund, which pays private practices to treat patients in public waiting lists. More aggro within RTE, and this is kind of a strange one, really, and I'm just imagining if Highland Radio were to do a promotion about sort of DJs and the news team and what have you, but hiring actors, it would be seem very, very strange. I would wonder, well, why would you do that? But anyway, RTE is facing growing fire over a controversial marketing campaign which uses actors to play journalists in the newsroom. Reporters were left stunned by news of the broadcaster's proposed promotional video. Workers were also furious that RTE spruced up the newsroom for the cameras, including the introduction of new plants which were removed when filming ended. So the production company came in and said, your workspace looks a bit tack, we're going to tart it up, but then they took the stuff with them when they were finished. Well, as the fallout over the promo continued yesterday, the chair of the Oireachtas Media Committee blasted Donnybrook bigwigs for using actors instead of staff, insisting it just doesn't sit right. I can't see the logic to it. I'm struggling to see why you would hire in actors to operate in the newsroom. But anyway, that's an RTE matter. But it's a matter for us, I suppose. We pay for it as well. Very lastly, Tesla sales in Europe have plunged last month. Despite increasing growth in the electric car market. The brand is suffering a backlash against billionaire chief Elon Musk over his political views. Sales in 32 countries fell by 7,261 in April from 14,228 in the same month in 24. Said the European Automotive Manufacturing Association. At the same time, sales of battery electric vehicles by all manufacturers soared by 28%. BYD is a big player now in the game. There's another, is it Xtrem, that have launched in Ireland now. I believe a lot of their vehicles are electric. But it just goes to show what public opinion is and how it can sort of, the shockwaves can go around the world you know, whilst Elon Musk might have thought he was doing the right thing, going in with Doge and cutting government spending and what have you, he was very political and of a very, particular political leaning. And it has impacted on Tesla. Their sales have halved in Europe, and it's kind of seen as a little bit of a toxic brand now. He stepped back from the government. It's interesting, very, very few of the Doge recommendations have actually been voted through. So he kind of wasted his time, if the truth be told. And Tesla paid the price, it has to be said. Right. OK, it is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And it's a very busy show. We've got an awful lot to cover. We're going to be across all the big stories affecting you here in the Northwest. We'll have some stuff that might help you learn a little bit about one thing or another. And of course, we'll be chatting to just people from this area, hearing their stories and hearing their views. That's what we do. Now, a meeting of the HSE's Regional Health Forum was held this week. And as you can imagine, the issue of the surgical hub was brought up. We have learned that Sligo is to get a surgical hub. And I heard the reasoning for it was based on population, which is really quite remarkable if that is the case. But Letterkenny University Hospital has lost out. Councillor Jerry McMonagall raised the issue at the Health Forum. Good morning to you, Jerry. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so what did you raise at the forum? What was your question?
Well, look, after the recent visit by the Health Minister to Letterkenny, she stated in an interview with yourself and also to ourselves who were present that there's no decision yet on the siting of a proposed surgical hub for the Northwest. So on the back of that statement, I asked the question that we would make a business case for the surgical hub to be sited at LUH. And asked the HSE to support that proposal. So yesterday we got a response that the LUH had identified the need for a standalone facility to be developed on a Letterkenny campus to provide ambulatory non-inpatient care. Mm. And the hospital is currently working with HSE Kemble and Estates. And what they were saying is that this was a bigger and better sort of than what the surgical hub would be. It would be on a par with that, and that then there would be additional diagnostic facilities, etc., etc.
The problem with that is that we would probably, with the right will, see a surgical hub work on that begin in months. The problem with the ambulatory centre is that there's not even an approved drawing for you. It is literally just a notion at this point. And there are multiple stages it would have to pass through before even it could be considered for funding. We're talking about years and years and years and years away. And I'm not being negative here, but I think it's very important. And I'm not suggesting you're doing this for a moment, Councillor, but people understand the difference between a surgical hub and how quickly that might be delivered and this notion, and that's all it is at this time, this notion of an ambulatory centre, which will be years and years away.
Yeah, and that's the exact same points I made yesterday at the HSE West forum meeting, Greg. This is an idea that they're sitting down to discuss it. It would be brilliant if it was delivered, but it's years away. It's years away. It as you say, it has to go through a discussion, a business case, and then there's detailed design, approval, an appraisal. There's tendering for it. There's then a planning. I get into the planning process. Then there's the construction. If we're successful and all of the other issues we have to go through, and if we get the funding. So there's a lot of ifs, mites, and maybes. Mm. Whereas the surgical hubs is, as I said yesterday, that is a strategy of the HSE. They're going to locate six new surgical hubs around the country, and one of them is going to be in the northwest. There's as a package of money there for it. And what we should be doing is looking for that. And I thought with the issues and the problems that we have at Letterkenny University Hospital down through the years, that this is we have the capacity for, and we also have the population of 167,000 people in Donegal, and it's something we really need.
The thing that people will have concerns about is that I'm not sure the hospital can wait. And I'm sure there are many, many patients listening now that might have ended up accessing a surgical hub and had better outcomes. They certainly can't wait. You know, the hospital is in dire straits, as you know, in terms of staffing and funding and what have you. And I would just have concerns that it can't wait for this idea to come to fruition. Would you share those concerns?
Yeah, and I spoke about them concerns yesterday. We are the second busiest Model 3 hospital in the country, and the only Model 3 is busy in us is Drogheda, and that's within 45 minutes of multiple Model 4 hospitals who have all of the things we're discussing here, all the facilities, all the services. We are totally underfunded at Letterkenny University Hospital. Our funding per patient is among the lowest in the country. And we can't wait any longer for this type of facility to be put in place at LUH. Look, I said yesterday and described, look, the bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. This, and it is a great concept, but it's coming far too late. And I wonder, and, you know, we have to wonder at times, is it this just been put in there now to sort of cloud over the fact that we didn't select Letterkenny?
Well, that's the responsibility of
our surgical hub.
Yeah, that's the responsibility of RTDs to hold the minister to account to ensure that. Ask her in the Dáil, you said, during a recent visit to Letterkenny University Hospital. A decision hasn't been made. We know for a fact that the decision had already been made at that point. You know, has the government signed off on this? Or is she going to send it back to the HSE for it to be reviewed? Because she seriously needs to have a look at the chain of command here, because she's saying one thing publicly, and I don't believe she's been in any way misleading, but we also know that plans are progressing in a different direction behind her back. So, you know, I believe she needs to be challenged or advised to say, does she need to send this back to the HSE for consideration to, you know, I mean, we don't want to take something from Sligo to our benefit, but if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Or at least to consider another surgical hub in a big population area such as Letterkenny University Hospital. Is there a window here? Has the government signed off on Sligo?
No, well, as the minister said, and you were there, you asked her the question, and she stated no, they hadn't. And what I have to say is, in fairness to our TDs and our TDs and the Regional Health Forum members and other and Senator Niall Binney were present at a meeting when this information was first imparted to us and the reasons why. Mm-hmm. And there was horror and aghast at that meeting. Mm-hmm. And
have you any idea why, out of interest, politically, no one spoke about it after that meeting? You said everyone was privy to it. Why was no statements issued from any of those politicians, I wonder?
I the reason why you just outlined there previously, Greg, this has to go to the ministers, all the TDs and Iraqis member on the call, and indeed the Regional Health Forum members said that they would do that, that they would get a focus on it, they would seek meetings with the minister, okay. And that they would also try, and they implored Tony Canavan and Sean Murphy, who's the manager in the hospital in Dermot Monaghan, the manager of the HSE here, to put together the business plan for the surgical hub. And quite clearly, the answer I received yesterday, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Canavan has to answer questions on that. And look, we need to go above his head. He took this decision himself, he said. He based it on flawed information.
Did he base it on population?
He referenced that.
Yeah. So how does that work? How does that work? I mean, my suspicion is that maybe he's using, maybe they're using patients that are going down for procedures from Donegal. Maybe, you know, the injections in the eyes, for an example, or ears, or skin conditions, or what have you. Are they using the raw population, or are they using sort of, you know, everybody that goes through Sligo University Hospital? Because if it's the latter, we shouldn't have to travel down there in the first place. And I think it would be very misleading to massage the Sligo figures with Donegal patients that shouldn't have to travel there in the first place. So do you know if it's based on that type of stuff, or is it raw population?
What I think, personally, and he didn't, when it was sort of put to him, he didn't deny it, but he based the population thing on, like, it's West, Northwest, that he based it on the population of Roscommon, Leitrim, and possibly West Cavan, which is under, you know, the auspices of the...
So we presume he pulled in south of the Lahey line as well then, so from Donegal into that.
I would imagine so. Mm. But, you know, he didn't look as if he was fairly confident about it. He certainly didn't want to answer the questions. Mm. But yes, population was used. And I mean, that caused a whole furore, to be honest, on the call, because people couldn't understand. I mean, Sligo has a population around 70,000 in the county, and we have 167 in our county. It's the geographic nature of it. You have to travel, if you're traveling from Fannet or Malin Head, you're nearly 2 hours before you get out of the county. I mean, it was... Why he put the case in for Sligo, we'll never understand. And he'll certainly not be able to explain it in a way that he could understand.
Well, I mean, I think the who's making the decisions and where they're from probably needs a little bit of scrutiny as well, just to make sure everything is fine in that regard, because the population argument doesn't seem to make sense. One final point, you know, I mean, obviously Sean Murphy is battering away trying to do the best he can with his resources. But did the hospital itself make an argument for a surgical hub? Because it was Mr. Murphy who was, you know, trumpeting the ambulatory centre. Okay, did he switch to that because the surgery hub was lost to Sligo? Or is Letterkenny focused more on the ambulatory centre than making a strong business case for the surgical hub? Is that clear?
Well, yeah, and what I would say is, because he spoke at the meeting yesterday, is that while he acknowledged and thanked us for continuing to highlight the lack of funding and investment at Letterkenny University Hospital, he still very much supported the ambulatory care centre being put there, and suggested this was what the hospital needed. And as I said, this is years away. If a surgical hub is located in Sligo, And I've nothing against that. I think there should be one in Sligo and in Letterkenny. But look, if it's there, then we have already a serious issue with filling our consultancy posts. If this goes ahead in Sligo, I don't think we will be able to carry out the services that were currently being carried out at Letterkenny, because I think it's going to be very, very hard to get consultants to come past Sligo in the future. So this is a very serious situation, Greg, and it's something that we need to rise up about. And I know that the Jack Dallas in Leinster House will be raising this issue with the minister and indeed with the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, because this has to be seriously looked at. We can't afford to allow this to happen.
I find it hard to believe that the health minister. I find it hard that the health minister could stand over. You would be privy yourself, I am sure, because you do your research as anyone else does. I would do as I sit in this chair. The amount of spend and projects for Sligo University Hospital, I'm delighted for them, is huge.
Yeah.
It's absolutely huge. Yeah. Galway University Hospital is the same. There are massive programs which you can see are a sign that the HSE is invested in those two facilities, particularly Sligo, because it kind of feels like it's similar to Letterkenny, even though we're much busier and have less spend per patient. So when you look at the programme of works, and I'll dig it out and bring it to the listeners a little later on. If you look at the programme of works for Sligo, for an example, and then you look at what's committed to Letterkenny, it would, and I'm on the fence here. I'm not taking a side in this. But you look at it on black and white, there is a future for Sligo University Hospital because it's committed to in terms of funding. And then you look at what's committed to for Letterkenny University Hospital, and this is a programme of works out for some time, and it doesn't look like Letterkenny University Hospital is being invested into for the future. And you mentioned earlier on about a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. The problem is we neither have a bird in the hand. And if the truth be told, there aren't two birds in the bush either. That's a fantasy at this point. Now, it may come to fruition years down the line, but we don't even have the two birds in the bush. That's a problem. And I really feel that we're at a point here now whereby the potential future of the hospital as it stands, even as a overstretched Model 3, is very much in danger.
Yeah, Greg, and I can't disagree. That's what we've been saying for years. And that's my real fear. And that's why I'm saying we're at a crossroads. And look, the people of Donegal need to rise up to this. They need to wake up to it. They need to, you know, get on the streets here. We need to really protest about this, because you see, if the surgical hub, the other investments that you're talking about, there's new theatres getting put into Sligo, there's new bed wards getting put into Sligo. There's other cardiac stuff getting put in Sligo. We are behind the curve so far. It's unbelievable. And look, and back to the earlier question you said, about the management and Letterkenny University Hospital and what are they saying about this? I don't know, because I don't hear them saying anything. And that's like a real concern for me. Look, we have been for years, the elected members, raising the concerns of the patients in Letterkenny and Donegal. Advocacy groups have been flagging up the gaps in the services that the patients that they represent. And all along, the management have been the quiet voice in this. And I think it's time for them now to stand up and say enough's enough as well, to stand shoulder to shoulder with the people of Donegal, and they look for more, and not to be looking down the road 7-8 years from now and hoping against hope that we will get the funding necessary to put that ambulatory care in. I just can't understand why the business case wasn't put in for the surgical hub, and why the management in Letterkenny University Hospital were not up in arms and out in the streets themselves protesting about that. I just can't.
All right, well, as I say, we're getting to a very critical point in the future of Letterkenny University Hospital, so there will come a time when people are going to have to decide whether they want to retain and support the hospital or not. For now, Councillor Jay McMonagle, thank you very much indeed. So Sligo University Hospital is getting a new ward block construction, 21 beds, in fact, two 21-bed wards. They're getting a second CT scanner installed, which is great for them. Listen, I don't begrudge them. They're getting a central sterile services department upgrade. Car park as well is being upgraded there. So, you know, that's good. That, in other words, fair play to them. By contrast, Letterkenny University Hospital is a very different picture in terms of, you know, what is being planned for its future development, its future growth, and what have you. And that is potentially a major concern. Letterkenny University Hospital in its programme of works is, this is what it's getting, fire safety upgrade programme. An extension to the laboratory, which is to be welcomed, and accommodation for physio and OT department. But that's it. That's it. So you see what Sligo's getting, what it's planned for. You know, stuff that builds the hospital, new wards, CT scanner, stuff that makes it grow as a facility to service the people that it services. Whilst Letterkenny University Hospital's stuff is about, you know, I mean, obviously there's some welcome and developments there, but really it's about fire safety and stuff. So we shall see. We shall see where we go from there. And the ambulatory centre, fantastic, but it isn't the two birds in the bush yet, because it has yet to even be designed, let alone planned for and funded. Whereas 60 million euro builds the surgical hubs. The plans are there. They're ready to go. You'd have it in months. So if we got okay for that, we'd have it. We'd have it this time next year, potentially with a good tailwind for 60 million. Fantastic. But the ambulatory centre would also be fantastic. But how long away is that? And I feel I have a responsibility sitting here not to sort of, you know, throw that smoke screen over the situation, because I know how dire things are for the staff and consultants and primarily, of course, too, in terms of us, our families, our outcomes, and what have you. That being said, good news from Declan Meehan at that meeting as well. Apparently there's been a dramatic increase in cancer patients receiving their care within the time they should. I think it's went from 31% up to 70%+, which is very, very welcome. And a new nurse is being financed to work at the hospital too. So there are little wins here and there as well. But I wonder if we hadn't all kicked up a stink about timely access to cancer treatment, would those numbers have increased from 30 to 70%? You know, when people go, oh, all you do is talk about the hospital, maybe our conversations do contribute to improvements as well. All right, back with more next. Okay, so a lot of correspondence coming in about traffic, as you can imagine. We got this message in. I'm an escort on a special needs bus covering several schools, both primary and secondary, in the Letterkenny area. The traffic's a nightmare. Do any of the people who make these decisions ever think on the impact inordinate delays cause on these children, how much it stresses them? One evening we sat 45 minutes between the Garda station and Max Mace due to some incident hold up somewhere up by the hospital. That's just one area that these long delays impact heavily on. Why don't these geniuses that sit making these decisions consult with the hundreds of workers in factories on the back road whose workers sit at the end of their shift languishing in long traffic delays to get out of Letterkenny to start their journey home? What part of ridiculous do they not get talking about a cycle lane along by the Mount Errigal Hotel when that whole area is a car park from 3 to 6 every working day? And finally, where are the traders in all of this? Surely businesses is heavily impacted in the whole Ballyrane area on a daily basis with this fiasco with 40 minutes delays in getting a 5 minute journey. And there's more from that listener, a Letterkenny resident. And we're also joined on the programme now on this issue by Rebecca McDade, Ain't Too Rep. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so by coincidence, you also were raising the issue of the impact on children with special needs and traffic, which is an angle I'm not sure plans or discussions or votes sort of takes into consideration. So it's a welcome topic to discuss from my perspective. So what are you hearing? You're an SNA yourself, so you're hearing firsthand stuff.
I'm an SNA and I work on the buses as well with children with special needs. And when we work with those children, we know the capabilities of the children. We know their tolerances. And some children cannot tolerate being any longer on the bus. They get very anxious, and we can't allow that to happen any longer. We're already thinking ahead. We have the rally weekend coming up. We have our bank holiday weekend before that. And this is going to be an absolute nightmare in our town again. So we're already heightened at the thought of the prospect of what's going to come again in these few weeks before school finishes.
How long more so are children stuck on these buses than they would need to be if traffic was moving freely? Like how, you know, how long do they be sitting about and how, well, what impact does it have on them? We're all individuals, but just as an example.
Yeah. It can be from 30 minutes to 45 minutes. It can be anything to those.
Yeah, say that again because we just lost your audio. How long?
Yeah, it can be anything from 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
In addition to what it should take.
In addition to what it should take. But the difference is for an ordinary person to be waiting that length of time in traffic, it's frustrating enough. But when you have a child who is used to a routine and they have anxieties that are extra and more and above anybody else, we cannot take them out of those routines. It is absolutely essential that those children get home in the recommended time. You not only have that, you have the parents who are extremely anxious because they know that their children won't be happy on a delayed bus. They know that.
And they'll know they'll have to deal with it potentially when the child gets home as well, because they might be they might be in a heightened state.
That's right. And even to deal with those children on a bus, it's extremely hard because it has a roll-on effect on the other children that are on the bus as well. So for other children that may be less heightened by anxiety, they will be a lot more alerted to there being a problem when somebody else will kick off on the bus. So we need to be alleviated from any of those type of situations going forward.
I mean, obviously, we'll talk about where we're at the moment before we talk about what impact the changes might have. Like really where we're at the moment, you know, the Letterkenny is built where it's built. That's the infrastructure. You know, you can't avoid public holidays. The rally is scheduled. So these things are outside of our control. So are you saying that, look, it's bad as it is, we don't want to worsen it? Or do you believe there is something that could be done to free up the movement of traffic?
There is different proposals, Greg, for new road layouts in Letterkenny. And I think that they need to be acted on as soon as possible. I do talk about the Bunagee Bridge. I can't ignore that because that has been talked about. I will be 46 years of age and that has been a discussion in my house since I was a child. And that still has never come to fruition. And I live out in that direction. That was my home, was in Bunagee, Drumnahoe, actually. So that has been a discussion, as I said, forever and ever in my home. And that still has not been implemented yet. And I think it's actually disgraceful that Donegal, I have to speak about Donegal, that Donegal is completely left behind in everything, in every aspect. You look at the education side of things. You look at the hospital side of things. We are not getting the money that we deserve in Donegal, and we are not getting the infrastructure that we need. I talk about the rally because the rally has been in Donegalshire forever. And we have problems come around the rally weekend with traffic in our town. And all of the main traffic and flow comes straight into the Dry Arch roundabout at Bunagee. And then the traffic has to try and get into town from there. Now, you have the Leck Road, of course, but you really only have the Leck Road. Because if you go
The Leck Road during the rally will be reserved for emergency services, I'd imagine. So you probably don't have the Leck. If we're on about the same road, the Leck Road will be used for emergency services. So I don't think you'll actually will have that for the rally. You didn't last year.
And that's
year.
A massive issue, Greg. Massive issue. Mm. But there is proposals for other routes in town that will alleviate a lot of the pressure in the town. And I think that when you combine everything together, you'll have a great ring road that will give plenty of options for people depending on what direction they're coming from. That will alleve the pressure in the town.
Okay, well, that's what would be nice. It's not happening anytime soon, but what is happening sometime soon is there is money coming into the county, 2 or 3 million for active travel. Up Glencar, there are concerns that's being reduced to 2 lanes and will have issues for local residents there and those travelling to and from the hospital and other places of work. And of course, to the proposal which has already been approved for the road outside the Mount Errigal Hotel. This is nothing to do with the business, by the way. It's just a geographical landmark outside, if you prefer, outside Screwfix, to be reduced to 2 lanes. Do you believe that those plans should go ahead now, or given the concerns that you have for the children already, that could exacerbate delays and the transport of children?
Greg, I am telling you from my heart, this is going to be detrimental to everybody, and not just to children who are travelling on buses. The pressure on our bus drivers getting to and from their work is immense. With a full busload of children, you have that. You have those as one complete group altogether. Because these bus drivers not only have to go one bus journey, but go back to school to get the second group. So the pressure on those people is going to be immense. The flow of traffic, it's never going to work, Greg. If you cut down the flow of traffic from four cars to two, where is that going to lead? Because all of that traffic is still being brought into the Polestar roundabout. So in and out of there is going to be an absolute disaster. So I will put it on record that I absolutely 100% oppose that right here and right now, because they do not have the other places and the other infrastructure in place that will alleviate the pressure coming into that roundabout. They cannot carry on with that. And I wholeheartedly will put my hand up and say, I do not agree with it right now. That may be a vision for the future, but that is never going to alleviate the problem that we have right now. We need our proper roads. Those ring roads need to be looked at again. They need to do it very fast. It needs to be done right now. The planners have got to stop stalling on the decision-making in this regard, and not be worrying about any more of what's happening in the town and fixing little bits in the town, because that's never going to alleviate the problem. We need the bigger issues dealt with, which is our proper ring road, and we need that Bonnygee Bridge. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Bonnygee Bridge is being progressed as part of the 10T plans, you know, but it's not going to come anytime soon, so...
It's a massive issue, Greg, because it's been talked about for nearly 50 years.
I know
or
that,
more.
But it's welcome that me and you were talking about it, but it's really just not going to happen sooner than it's going to happen.
Because, but I have to ask why.
Because it's tied in with the road out to the border. It's tied in with the Twin Towns bypass and all of those are progressing. They have to be going to design, compulsory purchase order, public consultation.
Greg.
Well, the only solution would be to decouple that relief bridge or road, decouple that and progress that. But as you say, that's been talked in your household since you were a child, and it's not going to happen. That's just simply not going to happen. So we have to kind of deal with the stuff that we can influence. So what might happen, or what is probably going to happen, are the cycle lanes and the narrowing of roads. That's within our control, but the councillors have decided to go ahead with it.
Yes, but it's not going to alleviate the traffic, Greg. That's the biggest issue we've got.
It's the
traffic and the cars and your buses. Mm. If there's certain routes in our town where two coaches cannot pass together, and if you take away parking spaces, or say you widen a footpath, you are narrowing the space for two vehicles to pass.
Well, it's so narrow, they can't
even put bus
lanes.
But you have to think about the biggest vehicles that we've got that need to pass, which are coaches. And there are many, many bus drivers driving big coaches. It's not just an ordinary minibus. So you've got to take into consideration the bigger vehicles that's going to be used, that are going to be side by side, and is there enough room for those two vehicles to pass? Mm. And if there isn't enough room for those two vehicles to pass, as it stands, you cannot put in a cycle lane. Simple as that.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, I remember the similar conversation when they were narrowing the road at Capri. It's a traffic calming measure. And these big vehicles can pass each other. It's very, very tight, but it's by accident, not design. It's to slow people down. But a concern I would have, and I will dig out the plans again, is if Letterkenny gets a town bus service, where are the buses going to pull in for people to board them? You know, so it can take someone on a wheelchair or who on crutches quite some time to get onto a bus. And we need to accommodate them. Is that bus sitting in the middle of the road with 50 cars behind it, all getting frustrated and sitting on their horns? You know, like, it's...
You see, this is the problem,
it's not for
Greg.
Me. I'm not an elected rep, so it's not it's not
we
for me
We need to
too.
Talk to the people.
I'm
we need to talk
questions.
To the wheelchair users. That's one thing, and that perspective. And you're 100% right. And I have worked with people who are wheelchair users, because I've been working as a PA as well. So I know the certain issues that there is around different disabilities and abilities, okay? To say it both ways, because we all have different abilities. And Letterkenny is not fully wheelchair friendly yet.
Oh no, by no stretch. Listen, I mean, it's not even friendly.
Stores would be something that needs to be looked at there.
Of course, but also there's people who are visually impaired, and the hedgerows are hanging out over the footpaths, and they can't be cut till the end, till later in the summer. I must go, Rebecca. All your points were very well made, and I do appreciate your time. That is an A2 rep there in Rebecca McDade. I believe today is the last day for submissions. The NSAI, it launched, as you would know, a public consultation into IS 465. That's the assessment, testing and categorisation of damaged buildings incorporating concrete blocks containing certain deleterious materials. Well, the public consultation on that closes on the 28th of May, which is today. So I don't know at what stage it closes, but you can have your say online. We might share that link. I believe it is still open. But if you've got any interest in that at all, or you've got any concerns about what the future guidelines may hold, today's the last day to make a submission to the NSAI. You can go to their website and go to About and News, and you should find it there. As I say, these things come around perhaps more quickly. I have a child who attends Little Angels. He finishes at 2:45. Some days he doesn't get home until, wait for this, 4:45 because of traffic. The Monday is a public holiday and the school are taking Tuesday and Wednesday off as well. I suggested that they should swap the Wednesday and take the Friday off of the rally off. Apparently this can't be done. Businesses prosper during the rally and it's great for the town and local economy, but really isn't fair for all our children with additional needs. You will be sitting in traffic all day. Can you imagine leaving school at 2:45, not home to 4:45? That's an awful long sit. I think a shuttle bus service at the Bonagie roundabout would help with the traffic. There's something similar in Omagh, and it works very well. Greg, I'm currently sitting in traffic at Arena 7 and it's only 10 in the morning. These plans for roads narrowing at the Mount Errigal, they say, are absolutely crazy. And on it goes. Thanks so much for all of your comments coming in so far this morning. Loads to come in the next 2 hours of the 9 till noon show. After we take a break now, though, for the news and the obituary notices with Michaela Clark.